Chrissy! How many times have I told you? You hang around here, you hang out with daggers. If not, just go home.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Throwback Reviews Podcast. This is episode 13. Tonight we're doing the 1986 film Thrashin'. But before we do that, let me introduce the host. My name's Sean, and with me tonight is Steve McLaughlin, Door to Door Geek. What's up, Door?
Hey, man. I'm doing pretty rad. How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty rad myself right now.
Rad.
I was thrashing the microphone before we did this, but everything's good.
Sweet.
Everything's all good. And also with us, we have Rob Flack-O'Hara. What's going on, Flack?
Not much, man. What's going on? This movie really made me want to get my skateboard out of the garage. We talked about that, I guess, a little bit on the last episode. But, you know, these days I've got to worry a little bit more about insurance deductibles than we used to have to back in the day.
Yeah, we definitely touched on that last episode. It can cost you more. Not only in pain and broken bones, but financially now that we're older and supporting people instead of our parents who are always telling us to put our helmets on and knee pads and, don't worry about it. And you skate around the corner and be like, taking this off.
You know, I know you guys are Google Plus guys, right?
Oh, yeah.
See, I'm more of a Facebook guy. But let me tell you, there's an army, I tell you. Of other people's mothers who are out there ready at a moment's notice to comment on any photo I post of my kids not wearing a helmet.
Right.
And let me tell you, I don't know how somehow we survived the 70s, the 80s, maybe even the 90s without wearing helmets. I never wore a helmet. I don't know about you guys. Do you guys make your kids wear helmets when they do these things?
Yeah, when they ride bikes, they wear helmets.
Really?
But I only wore helmets. I didn't wear a helmet when I go street skating or anything, but I had a half pipe in my backyard, and it was a 4-foot mini half. And it was required that anybody that was to skate at my house had to wear a helmet. So
insurance reasons, I'm sure. Yeah. I don't think my parents could spell helmet. And I will say, I make my oldest son wear a helmet. And if you knew my oldest son, you would make him wear a helmet too.
I will take helmets off my kids. If I catch them wearing a helmet, it's coming right off.
What are you doing? You're embarrassing me.
I'm old school, baby.
Well, yeah, and like as a kid, I distinctly remember being in the station wagon as a young child, completely unbuckled, just flying all over the back when the cars
were motion. Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And by, I don't know, I guess people would say today, the miracle of God's grace, I'm alive. Yet everybody I knew is still alive.
I'm going to tell you guys, when I was a kid, you know, my dad's family lives in Chicago, which is an 800-mile drive from here. And I have distinct memories of, we had a pickup truck with a camper on the back, like a sleeper thing, you know? And my parents would put me in the back on a lawn chair.
Yeah.
And I was sitting in a lawn chair in the back of a pickup for 800 miles.
Yeah. Did you do the arm move every, like, 50, 100 miles after you saw a big rig?
Oh, absolutely. And I'll tell you this, I didn't wear a helmet.
Yeah, you know what? I think about this all the time, how we could do some sort of episode just on the differences of stuff like that from when we were kids to now. Because it is. It's huge. And it's so, beat into our heads now. You know, we went to the amusement park for my work picnic this weekend, and my nieces met us there. It got dropped off, and they were going to get picked up later. So I said to my wife, we're going to leave soon. We could just take them home. But in my van, I had part of the back seats are a 50 split. So I had part of it taken out. So I had no seats for them. And my wife's like, they'll have to just sit on the floor without, you know. And I'm like, well, I don't know. Can I do? I mean, I really probably shouldn't be doing that, should I? I mean, should I call Scott and see if that's okay? I mean, I know my brother would be like, just bring them home. But it worked out that I didn't have to make that tough decision because they wanted to stay longer anyways. But it is. Things are totally different.
Yeah,
go ahead, Rob.
No, I was just going to say my wife is definitely a stickler, you know, for the rules like that. And I guess I'm more like old school for stuff. But my dad, a few years ago, he bought a, I think it was a 68, I want to say, Chevelle, and brought it over and wanted to take the kids for a ride. And what we found out is that it didn't have any seatbelts in it.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so my wife was like, you know, don't, I don't know or whatever. And I'm like, oh, I'm sure there's seatbelts. Just, you just can't see them. They're probably tucked in. Don't worry about it.
You're like, I'll get it, hon. You're like, as you're acting, okay, guys, now with mom ass, I'm buckling your seatbelt right now.
Right. Right. A little pantomime going on.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think we could definitely do an episode at some point about all the differences because it's, there's a ton.
Oh, absolutely.
The way things have changed. And I'm sure, you know, a lot of them are for the better, even though we complain and make fun of it. But anyways, we are talking about thrashing. Now, Rob, you made it clear that this is definitely a movie that you watched a lot. I never saw it before. I thought I did, but I had never seen it. After watching it this week, I knew the movie, the name, but I never saw it. How about you, Dor?
Yeah.
Oh, no, absolutely. I knew I didn't see it only because the main star is so recognizable. I mean, this is the older brother in Goonies. I like the split second I saw him, I knew I didn't see this movie because I would have remembered it.
Right. Well, this was a regular rotation rental for us. You know, probably once a month we would, you know how you had like your favorite movies you would get over and over? We would rotate through. Like we might get a new movie and something else, you know, but we definitely rented this movie. It seems like once a month, you know, for years we would watch Thrashing for sure. So this is definitely one that I saw a lot as a kid.
Yeah, never saw it. Like we were talking earlier, Rad. I would get Rad all the time. Like for a whole summer, I was renting it. I don't even think I watched it every time. I think I had this little toy, like, and it wasn't even a BMXer. It was like this little toy dirt bike where the guy's hands were kind of like slid onto the handlebars so it wouldn't fall off.
Right.
And I would pretend I would pretend he was a BMXer, and I would like play with it all the time like that.
Right. So you could very easily have him do a Superman
or a flip, right? Stuff like that. Yeah. So I was more into Rad. But so this came out in 86. Were you skating when this first came out, or was this what made you want to like get into skating?
Well,
Rob.
Yeah. I'd say cause I never saw the movie.
Oh yeah. Well for me, for sure. I was skateboarding before this, but I would definitely say, this one took it up a level for me because this is more than just, I mean, at that time, I'm trying to think some of the things, like there was ESPN was just starting again. I mean, this is definitely pre-X Games, but
oh, yeah.
There was the, like the OP championship. There was the Vision Streetwear skateboarding tournament. So ESPN was showing that kind of stuff, but most of those things took place on giant half pipes and I didn't have access to one, you know, but this movie was more than just, you know, guys on a ramp or whatever. It was like this entire lifestyle. So it didn't necessarily, I mean, it did make me want to skate and like try to do, you know, more tricks and things like that. But more than that, it made me want to, like, I didn't want to be a skater. I wanted to have the skate house that the Daggers lived in. I wanted to have a house that was covered in graffiti, and I wanted my friends to have matching skate vests and be a gang. You know, it was like like the whole skate lifestyle I wanted after this.
Yeah. See, the first skate movie I had seen was A Search for Animal Chin, which is a Paolo Peralta movie. And that came out in 87. So I think Animal Chin, if you watch both the movies, it's like they're kind of spoofing on Thrashing in some of the scenes. But we'll get into those scenes when we start talking about some scenes. But for anybody that hasn't seen Thrashing, one, if you go to throwbackreviews.com, there's a... on the menus, there's a photo and videos. You could just click that. I got a link to the YouTube where there is a full-length Thrashing on there. So you can go there or just go to YouTube, check it out. But Rob, do you want to just give like an overall about the film so everybody kind of knows?
Sure, sure. Well, basically, it's about Corey Webster, who is a skateboarder, and he has come to Los Angeles to spend the summer with his skateboarding buddies that are known as the Ramp Locals, which is a really cool name. And, of course, while he's in Los Angeles, he falls in love with this beautiful blonde named Chrissy. But what we find out is that Chrissy's brother is actually Hook, who is the leader of a notorious grimy skateboarding gang known as the Daggers. So they are Hook and the Daggers. And so there are several run-ins between Hook and the Daggers and the Ramp Locals. And then eventually, there's a conflict between Corey Webster wanting to date the girl, the conflict between his group and the Daggers, and eventually, after multiple run-ins, their differences are going to be decided at the L.A. Massacre, which is a giant downhill race that's going to be the climax of the movie. So I don't know if you've ever seen, you know, we've talked about, I know, Sean, you've seen like some musicals. I know you talked about Music Man and some things like that. But this is essentially West Side Story. It's all, you know, but it's just been placed in this environment or whatever. So it's definitely not new, you know, a new idea as far as movie plots go. But it does take place in the mid-80s in the world of skateboarding in Los Angeles.
Yeah, you definitely nailed it that with West Side Story.
Yeah.
Because it is, it's the gangs and the love interests, and you can't be with them. And but it was good. I enjoyed the movie, and I probably maybe if I wasn't like a, I don't know, a previous skater, maybe I wouldn't have liked it as much. But I felt like I was 12 years old watching this movie.
I'm telling you, it made me want to go get my. I have a Steve Caballero, an old skateboard out in the garage. And it made me, just watching this again, want to go get that out there and try to do a little thrashing of my own around the neighborhood. But I'm sure I would be the thrashy. I don't know if that's a...
You would be thrashed. Yeah, you know, we have a cement park just, I mean, it is like 10 minutes down the road, free. And it's in the town where I grew up, where we used to get chased around for skating, exactly. Different spots, you know. And it's really funny that... you know, back when I was skating, because I don't think I got into skating until like 87, you know, right? Because someone brought over Animal Chin to my house and I had never really thought about skating and I was hooked after that. And I'm going to look on YouTube after too and see if I can put a link to that movie, because that's definitely an awesome skate movie, where it's kind of like, it's not just your typical, like now you see skate movies where they're just clips and scenes of different pro skaters that are sponsored by whoever's making the video. It was like thrashing where there was a plot behind it. So, right.
And it's funny that you said that there may be some throwbacks to thrashing and that, because a lot of the guys that are in Animal Chin were skaters that appeared in thrashing. I mean, the Bones Brigade, all those guys, pretty much all of them, I think, are in thrashing. So,
yeah. So as far as actors, it was what, Josh Brolin?
Right. Dor mentioned that. Josh Brolin from, No Country for Old Men. He's been in a million things. Dor, yeah. Help me out here. What are some of the things he's been in?
Well, I'll say he's known for the Goonies because everyone knows Goonies. But two, No Country for Old Men, Wall Street, which I got to say, he was actually very good in Wall Street. But he has had a very active career through the ages. But I will say he physically looks almost completely different now as a grown man. But he's been in a lot of stuff, from the Mod Squad, Hollow Man, Mimic, the Outer Limits, the Young Riders TV series. I do remember that, and I do remember seeing him in that.
I was amazed. A lot of the people, and this is just, I guess, because the time, you know, the era, but a lot of these people, now, obviously, there are stunt doubles that do some of the heavier skating type scenes or whatever, where they're doing big tricks. But, I mean, there are a lot of scenes where you could see Josh Brolin skateboarding around town. So,
yeah. Yeah. And I definitely respected that.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, definitely, because, you know, people think that, and not even like tricks aside or anything like that, but just to, I'll give you a perfect example. We're driving down the street yesterday and there's a kid on a skateboard, and my wife, who never skateboarded before, but she knows I used to skate, and we look at him and she goes, he just does not look comfortable on that skateboard. And this kid didn't look like he was definitely using it as a,
transportation,
you know, a mobile
device.
Transformation. Yeah, exactly. But looked completely uncomfortable on it, where Brolin, in the scenes that you can tell he's done, and he was doing some carving and stuff, you know, just weaving. He looked comfortable on the board, mm-hmm. as well as so did some of his locals.
Right. Except for Bozo.
Right. And Bozo, I think, is it Brent or Brett Marks? But I mean, I recognized him immediately as the kid from Bad News Bears. And it's the same hair as that same curly mop hair, you know? And yeah, he's definitely, I think, he's comic relief. He's one of the ramp locals, and I don't think he was probably, I mean, in the 80s, everybody was, I won't say everybody, but a lot of people were, you know, dabbled in skateboarding. Right. So it wouldn't be a stretch to hire somebody and say, hey, can you skate down the street? And it wouldn't be a problem. But obviously some of the people had more, you know, practice at it than others.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause even, I don't know, what was his name? Radley. I mean, you could see it was him on the board at times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's another one that's interesting. I guess he got into the music world, and I don't have his name here in front of me.
Josh Richman.
That's it. Yeah,
Richman. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I read online on his IMDb biography. He directed at least one Guns N' Roses music video, and he managed Dead Sea for a while. So I couldn't find any current music stuff, so I don't know if that's was something he got into and out of. But, you know, it was that pool of people. I mean, I'm sure they went to downtown Los Angeles and got, you know, I mean, the skateboard. It was all tied into the punk scene, the music scene, things that were happening. So, it's not surprising that these people floated around a little bit. Now, somebody that I don't think was probably part of that scene was Chrissy, who's the love interest of Corey Webster, and she was played by Pamela, is it Gidley?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it even said, I noticed this because we saw this in a couple previous Throwback Review episodes, My Bodyguard for one, I think, where it said an introducing or something like that, Pamela Gidley. Like, she was going to, I don't know who she is after this. Do you?
She's did a bunch of TV little spots and stuff. The only thing that I really recognized her from is she was in Twin Peaks.
I never saw Twin Peaks.
Yeah. So, and actually, I think there was a couple other people in this movie ended up in Twin Peaks for some reason. So I don't know if there's a tie there or not, but.
Did the girl who played Velvet, Sherilyn Fenn, was she on Twin Peaks?
Yep.
She looks, and like I said, I've never seen it, but I've seen like covers and everything, or, you know, poster art from it. She looks really familiar. And Dor and I were talking before you got on the Hangout that I said she looks really familiar, but I can't, when I looked at her, nothing looked familiar.
Right. And so there's a actually interesting story about her and Thrashin', and that is that she was actually picked to be in Thrashin' because she was Johnny Depp's girlfriend.
Huh. And
Johnny Depp was originally tied to be the lead in Thrashin'.
I'm glad he wasn't.
God.
Right. And so he had a conflict because he ended up going to 21 Jump Street, which I guess Josh Brolin had been tied loosely to 21 Jump Street.
Wow.
So they pulled him over into Thrashin'. So it could have been a totally different movie with Johnny Depp because, you know, the ramp locals, the good guys in this movie, all have that clean cut kind of look. You know, they're all American guys. I mean, they were skateboarders, but they're not, you know, the rough kind of edge that you might think Johnny Depp would bring to the role.
Yeah. So as far as skating, I mean, we had some pro skaters, like you mentioned earlier, some of the Bones Brigade. The only one I did notice Tony Hawk. I noticed McGill. I'm pretty sure. McGill. It's funny because at the I believe it was the pool contest, they announce who's going to do the first McTwist, and as soon as he says that, you see Mike McGill go up. But I think then after that, it cuts to Tony Hawk. I don't know if he does a McTwist, I think, or something, but
I don't know. You know, this is just from IMDb, and I'll skip the ones that are lesser known people, but just some of the names I recognize: Tony Alva, Mark Bungsky, Per Weilander, Christian Hosoi, which everybody knows from the 80s, Steve Stedham, Steve Caballero, Tony Hawk, Tony Magnuson. I mean, it just goes on and on and on here. Kevin Stabb, Billy Ruff, Rodney Mullen appears, you know. So it's really everybody. Lance Mountain, he's Bones Brigade, right? He's in Animal Chin.
Yep.
And Mike McGill, like you said, I don't know. I assume people know that the McTwist was named after Mike McGill. It was really – oh, Chris Cook, that's another one. I had posters of a lot of these guys on my bedroom, you know, when I was a kid. Just really a who's who, and it's amazing that, you know, 5 years later, these are probably people that you would pay, you know, $500,000 or whatever, you know. I mean, like actual star money to get them in a film. But
back then,
you know, it's just like, I don't know. You just get this feeling like they just wanted to be in the movie. Like they were just hanging out doing whatever they do, you know?
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. definitely. I mean, they were the who's who in the skate world, but to be being pulled into the Hollywood world, I mean, they were nobodies, you know. Mm-hmm. And some of the guys, I'll be honest, some, you know, I know by name and I didn't recognize. Christian Hosoi, definitely recognized. He was a total jerk in this movie. So is Tony Alva, a total jerk in this movie. But then you got guys like Tony Hawk you know, the other Bones were guys that you just saw them for their skating skills, mm-hmm. you know, and Tommy Guerrero, he's the other one. He's the other Bones Brigade, original Bones Brigade, Tommy Guerrero, who wasn't in this as far as IMDb. And I couldn't really recognize him, which is kind of weird because he had that. If you remember in the beginning of the movie, where we first introduced to the daggers, where they come slowly over the hill, yeah. very dramatic. Right. And then they're kind of doing that carving down right. and doing the little slides, you know. That was totally like Tommy Guerrero style. So I was looking for him. And then Hosoi is one of the guys who, you know, does an acid drop off the top of...
Right off the car, sure, yeah.
Yeah, Bozo's car.
And that's where we first see Hook, who is the leader of Hook and the Daggers. And Hook was played by Robert Ressler. And immediately, I mean, I know this guy basically for two roles. I mean, later on, well, actually three roles, but he became famous later on in something else. But... he's the bad guy. I mean, he's the main bad guy, the leader of the Daggers, but he was also one of the two, I guess if you would call him a bad guy, in Weird Science.
Yes.
You know, so so he's the other, you know, the guy that was always given Anthony Michael Hall and his buddy, you know, a rough time. They poured the icy out, you know, on the mall and all that.
I knew this guy looked familiar.
I know, and he looks exactly, you know, I mean, he was with Robert Downey Jr. Remember, it was those two guys. And then I think either that year, it was either the same year or the next year, he was in Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2. And he plays the exact same role. So he almost like got typecast as like the smart aleck kind of, you know what I mean?
Jerk.
Like that guy.
Yeah,
exactly. The jerk sidekick. And then, you know, I did not put this together, but I, you know, he was in a bunch of different stuff. But he was in Babylon 5.
Don't know that either.
In season 2, yeah, he was in that. And then I pulled this one out just for you, Sean. He was in an episode of Murder, She Wrote.
Nice.
In 1984, episode The Secret of Gila Junction. Maybe Gila Junction there. So while you're watching Murder, She Wrote at work there, if you want to go pull that episode up.
I'll have to look that one up.
But it did say in his biography that he was a semi-pro skater at the time, too.
What?
So he actually did.
Well, he's the guy that looked like he couldn't skate.
Yeah, he definitely, you know, the other guys definitely looked better around him for sure.
Yeah, he didn't have as smooth of a style. Unless he, you know, is going to go at a delivery truck and do a flip off.
That's what I mean. It was so. Because of the cuts and everything, that's why I thought that's not him skating. Because every time they cut to him, it was extreme hard cuts to, so it could have been anybody doing it.
Yeah, you know what? I didn't have a problem with Brolin in this role, but for some reason, this guy that played Hook, he really kind of got under my skin, which I guess that's what they want him to do. But yeah. He really did get under my skin to the point where, honestly, I didn't even really pay attention to his skating until the end joust scene, which I'm sure we'll cover.
Right. So you mentioned the backflip scene and there's the joust scene. So I wrote down a few different scenes that I thought, you know, instead of going like what we had done before, going through thing by thing, but like some of the scenes. The backflip scene, maybe you could go through that. I mean, because that's just one of those goofy things right at the beginning where it's like, I don't know, like I guess they're trying to set, you know, set the mood that these guys are great skaters, you know?
Well, yeah, because they were like en route to like their little skate area, which I'm not, what part of California was it? It wasn't Santa Cruz, was
LA.
It? Or was it LA? Because I think at one point we see like the Hollywood Stars. I thought they said... Ventura or something, but either way,
he said something valley was right over the hill.
Yeah, because Valley Boy or whatever, they were giving him trouble. But yeah, they, you know, Hook and his crew are heading towards their little place on the beach that's their area.
Turf, right?
Their turf, yeah. And as they're skating, you know, down kind of like an alleyway or a little road, like you would see a big white delivery truck that's going to deliver your bakery goods or something. Stops and they all stop behind Hook and he kind of eyeballs it and then starts skating towards it. And then this really weird cut scene to where it's his feet jumping off the board. And then he kind of runs on the side of the truck and flips and then lands back on the board. And then the thing takes off.
It's such a weird move. I mean, it's a move that nobody's ever done in skateboarding, you know? I mean, yeah.
Well, that's the thing. I never knew a skateboarder, one who did that. And it wasn't really skateboarding. So I didn't, to me, that was something Hollywood said, you got to do it. Come on.
Exactly. And we were talking about this earlier that, you know, comparing this to Gleaming the Cube with Christian Slater, you know, Gleaming the Cube was just a Hollywood movie. And Rob had even said, you know, it didn't have to be skateboarding. It could have been anything. It could have been ping pong. You know, it could have been anything. Where this was a skating movie made in Hollywood, but they wanted skating to be the focus of it.
Yeah.
And that's why there was just the plot of the, you can't be over here, you can't be over here, and the girl in the middle and the love story. But they still had, you know, that Hollywood touch with stuff like this. I mean, there was a lot of really cool skating that nowadays people would look and be like, wow, that's really old school. And it is. And you would think those tricks are really easy or whatever, some of them, which they're not.
No.
But in the day, man, that was like... There were some great moves, just the simple street skating that they were doing. But yeah, stuff like this, I was like, all right, they could have left that out.
Yeah, and like I said, it's that scene where he's trying to establish, like, he's the lead of the Daggers, but it's such a weird, it definitely feels like a scene that wasn't written by a skater. You know what I mean? Like something that somebody on the script was like, all right, here's what he's going to do, a backflip off a bread truck.
Yeah.
It was kind of odd.
And you know, there's something I wanted to point out that I noticed today. I watched it twice since we decided to do this. And when I rewatched it today, when they do come over that hill, that dramatic scene, mm-hmm. He says, I think it's Bozo says, that's Ralph. Or no, that's Monk. But I used to know him as Ralph in the Valley. Mm-hmm. So... Monk actually was it, you know, and now when you see Monk in the movie, he's like this badass, like, you know, grungy guy. But at one point he grew up in the Valley with these guys who are their rivals. So right. I thought that was kind of neat. It was very subtle.
Well, it was too subtle in my opinion, because he's the guy that ended up telling them where the ramp was so they could set it on fire.
Yeah.
So that part makes sense if you caught it in the beginning.
Right. And that's also another weird thing that, that guy is Mark Monksky. So it's like his name is Monk, but his last name, I mean, in real life. So it's one of the few things where, I mean, they didn't mention any of the other skaters like that being their real name.
Right.
You know, but, I don't know. I just thought that was kind of weird. So we have that. We also have, one of the set locations we talked about. Down by the beach where the Daggers hang out, but they also have their skate house.
Yeah.
Where they hang out. It's like a community house where all these skaters, you know, and I gotta tell you, when I was a kid, I thought that was the coolest thing. There's a scene where they're actually skating on the roof, where they're sliding around on the roof, you know, they have all the walls inside are spray painted. I don't know. What did you guys think of that place?
You know, today watching it again, I noticed, and it's a really strange comparison, but I was thinking the Smurfs, and the reason I was thinking Smurfs was, yeah, and I'm glad that Rob was drinking, but because if you think about the Smurfs, okay, I'm going to go, you know, that's very Smurfy, that shirt, or you know what I mean? Everything was Smurfy. If you look at the house, there's like stenciled daggers all over, or actual daggers mounted all over. Like, it was just daggers. Like, we know you guys are the Daggers, but it was like the Smurfs was just overdone, like daggers everywhere. I don't know. I don't know why. the Smurfs came in my head. I know it's kind of a weird comparison, but
yeah, I was never artistic in that way, but you know, now that I think about it, I'm thinking about making some stencils. Like I may go, you know, I just got a new car, and I may go spray paint a dagger on the hood. That would be so awesome. I'll just drive around town and be like, you know, oh, is that Hook? I knew him when he was Rob and he worked in IT.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, but now he's Hook and he thinks he's bad.
He's got a cool earring and a bone through his nose.
Yeah, yeah. That's yeah, they definitely you know, he's a Hollywood version of a bad guy, you know.
Yeah. I was definitely more leaning towards the RV little shack that Corey had his
Webster, stand. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, that's where I would. That would be more of my speed. Like, yeah. There's the ramp. Oh, in the back of this guy's house. You're not staying in the house. You're staying in the camper that's over there. So the Dagger's house was not appealing to me.
Oh, I don't know. You know, when I was a kid, it's just like there's murals on the walls. I mean, it is a little overkill, but you know what? When you're the freaking Daggers, you got to represent. You know, you got to put Daggers everywhere.
Where was Hook originally from? Minnesota or something? Or
Indiana.
Indiana. Yeah.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah, that's where his sister is coming Bend. From.
Yeah, that house was definitely something.
Yeah.
And it was funny too, because they would have like scenes there where like when Corey goes to see Chrissy, because he's like forbidden and he's like sneaking around the house, and there's like Hook and Hosoi and Alva and all them guys like doing this really weird like wrestling, jumping on each other, and there's like, I don't know, it's kind of weird the way they had like their goofing off type thing. Like the girls are in the bedroom doing makeup or whatever, I don't know, and here's these guys like wrestling like they're in a locker room or something.
I just hear jealousy. That's all I hear from you right now. Like, you want to hang out with the Daggers. It's like, you know what? When Dora comes and we're playing with my Fisher Price guys or whatever, then we're going to be Daggers, and then you can be the
ramp local. So what you're saying is I'm going to be looking in your window at you and Dora wrestling with each other, laughing and giggling with Fisher Price.
Exactly. Well, you're one of the lame ramp locals. Right. We're the Daggers.
And we'll have cans that have in big green letters B-E-E-R.
And that is a visual for the listeners to have.
So I think seeing that a lot of people remember is the club, the nightclub that they go to, because especially when I was a kid, I thought places like this actually existed, but I never found one. But so Dor, maybe you could talk a little bit about the club and the band that's performing at the club.
Exactly. That's what made me pop huge. It was the Red Hot Chili Peppers before they dare, and I'm sorry if I draw hate from anyone, but before they went pop. This was like raw Red Hot Chili Peppers when they were hungry for success. And I thought that was a great look at them back in the day. And the same kind of moshing was basically going on here. Or everybody was just going at it after one another. And for some reason, the one kid had a skateboard on the dance floor kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which confused
as far as the Chili Peppers, I'm not a lover, not a hater. Like, I just never was anyway about the Chili Peppers. You know, if I hear them, I'm like, oh, yeah, it was cool to them. But I never got into them, never bought their stuff. But like you said, I could tell the difference in style. It was actually pretty cool to see them and performing. They were definitely, I mean, I know it's a movie, but it looked very interesting. And that club, again, and I'm only going to point out a couple. This is one of the other scenes where I was like, okay, this is another somewhat throwback that Animal Chin does where they're at a lounge seeing Johnny Rad, and there's a bunch of skaters freestyling. Doing some little launch ramps on the wall, stuff like that. So same scene where they're kind of being goofy and dancing.
Yeah, let's see. This came out 86, right? Is that what we said? So I was 13 when this came out. And so, you know, to me, these were the kids that were 3 or 4 years older than me, and I thought, God, when I'm 16, that's where I'm going, wherever this skate club is.
Right.
And it turns out, I don't know, I looked a lot of places, they don't have skate clubs like that in Oklahoma.
Or Buffalo.
Or in Maryland.
I mean, right, I could put you on a mechanical bull pretty quickly. But yeah, there's no thrash bashing going on around here. And yeah, they, I definitely, when this came out, I didn't know who the Chili Peppers were. I probably didn't know for several more years. I mean, probably till what, Blood Sugar Sex Magic, what's that, like 90 91, somewhere in there.
Yeah, I'll say same here. I didn't know they existed until after, you know, they were popular for a year or two. And clubs around here, about the only thing I can get you around here is the clap.
Yeah, I think you can find that at just about any club.
Yeah, but
you could probably get it from a mechanical bull.
Yeah, if you try hard enough. Look at the stats. Baltimore is number one.
Well, there you go, buddy.
We're number one at something.
You guys are the best at that.
Yep.
You know, and in the scene, I know we seen as far as freestyle skating, Per Wellander, excuse me, on the beach earlier in the scene. We were talking about where Corey goes to the Daggers lair, you know, their kind of area. But he was in this scene as well. There's a couple freestylers where I'm assuming this is the only spot that you're going to see like a Rodney Mullen,
right.
Mm-hmm.
Which as far as I'm concerned, and probably a lot of people, as far as freestyle skating, he is the king of freestyle skating. You know, he was just amazing.
Yeah.
Totally different. I thought a different style.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, did he, I need to brush up on my skateboarding history. Did he invent the ollie or just perfect the ollie or what? I know that he's tied to.
I believe invented it or, I'm not sure now.
I believe he's the guy that basically brought it into pop culture. I don't know if he can lay ownership to claiming of inventing it, but I know he was the guy that first, quote unquote, did it right.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because I remember back in the day going up a curb in kind of an ollie motion-esque, where I could get both wheels off the ground, but it was literally only like an inch or two.
Because
I ain't trying to lie, guys. I skateboarded back when there was only, you know, 2-foot plastic skateboard decks. You know what I mean? Where they were like 4 inches wide. I skateboarded back when it was very uncool to skateboard.
Yeah, I remember. You know, our big thing was like, I think we said last time, you know, like if you could ollie like a crack in the sidewalk or, you know, like you said, up a curb and just enough, you know, the rear wheels would kind of hit the curb and scoot up a little bit, you know. And there was one kid at school that you could take a skateboard and put it on its side and he could ollie that. And we thought that was the coolest thing. And then I remember seeing Rodney Mullen ollie a shopping cart. Yeah. On its side and
just blow you away. Yeah. Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, he just did so much for skateboarding.
Yeah.
But
yeah, and anybody who does, who's not familiar really with Rodney Mullen, you gotta look at him on YouTube and see his stuff when he was just like 10 years old to like modern days, the way he adapted. And you know, because he had to change and adapt with the style of skating that street skating was going. You know, freestyle kind of went away, and his street skating is amazing. I mean, just simply, the guy is so talented.
Yeah, when he started, I mean, it was just like almost like not a gimmick, but I mean, there was nobody else doing what he did.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and people didn't appreciate a freestyle skater compared to a ramp or a pool skater
or downhill.
You know, it was just like a free, and they kind of, you know, mention that in a way, or hint at it. It's kind of, the one girl kind of like, oh, freestyle. And
Right.
I'll just say to anyone who, the quickest way I can exclaim it to you, think of any other sport and the top athlete in that sport, whether it be Michael Jordan in basketball or whoever you want in baseball. In my humble opinion, there was no greater athlete in their sport at the time than Mullen for skateboarding. He blew
far as street goes.
Well, yeah, he blew everyone's minds. The stuff he did, no one even believed was close to possible. And it wasn't like one thing he did. It was like 50 things he did were just mind blowing.
Yeah, well, he used to, I mean, he's like how Tony Hawk was for ramp skating.
Yeah.
You know, so that's our Rodney Mullen tangent.
A tribute to Rodney Mullen, yeah. Now, another scene you made just a brief reference to, and this is definitely a scene that has been made fun of, lampooned, joked about ever since this movie came out, is the joust scene. Mm. So, Sean, you want to set up the joust scene here?
Yeah. And
this is a big conflict moment of the movie.
Yeah, this is like, instead of having like a fight, because they've really had enough, these two, let's just call them gangs for less of a better term. You know, there's been a fight between, I don't know if it was Radley and basically him and, he fought Hook. He got his butt kicked by Hook,
yeah.
But he also started fighting Monk at one point. So, and then Corey had come up and wanted to fight Hook. And because Chrissy was there and she's and loves her and loves her brother and loves Corey. So Corey is challenged by Hook to a joust, which I honestly, when he said that, watching this first time, I said, what the hell is he talking about? A joust. And then what I thought of is I think it was Skate or Die on the Commodore 64.
Yes,
where you actually
yeah.
had the joust on the half pipe. Right.
And you had pugilists.
Lester. Yeah.
And I thought, are you really serious? And they end up meeting, which kind of reminded me of like a Grease type area where they race. Yeah.
Right, right.
But they didn't really have sticks. It was more of like a sack.
Well, it's kind of like half like, of a nunchuck and the other half looked like a pillow.
I don't know. All I was thinking was bean bags, little mini bean
right,
bags.
But I mean, they were supposed to be filled with something heavy, I'm sure, sand, dirt, rocks, or whatever, but they looked like they were puffy.
You know, it's definitely one of those, it's definitely a Hollywood scene.
Yeah.
We've talked about these before on the shows where you think in real life, you know, the first thing you would do if you were, I mean, you've got a stick with a chain on the end or something in a big bag, and if you were skating next to somebody, the first thing I would do is hit them right in the knee.
Mm-hmm.
Their skateboard would go flying out, and as they were laying there, I'd hit them in the head with this thing.
Well,
and that would be the end of the joust.
Close. I was very dirty, fighter as a child. The first thing I would do is basically torpedo my skateboard, fling it right at the guy, so he would have to do some kind of maneuver. Then I would hit him in their knee or someplace lower while they're trying to avoid my skateboard.
Yeah, I mean, you have to actually put in a lot of effort to not knock someone off during this joust, right? You know, so. Yeah, that is definitely a cheesy, cheesy scene.
It was, but in hindsight, it was very needed to show these guys really passionately hate each other, and they needed a way to legitimately have him break his arm.
Right, right. And that's a big plot point, because the last part of the movie is the L.A. Massacre, which is this downhill race. People, I mean, they go flying. And right before that, because of the joust, Corey Webster breaks his arm.
Yeah. Yeah, and so, Chrissy got pulled away.
And right. Yeah, and beat by a guy who has blue paint on his
yeah,
eyes.
True, true, true.
I don't know. I honestly could have done without that scene. I think they could have figured it out some other way. But
I'll say
I went with it.
I could have went without the lovemaking scene.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
And I'll say here was my only gripe about the movie. As a skateboarder, as a skateboarding fan, I don't need a lovemaking scene. I think it would have been better for the story if there was no lovemaking. That would make the meetup at the end even more important. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. As a 13-year-old, you know. Yeah. Up-and-coming skateboarders myself, I thought, here's a guy with a broken arm living in a trailer getting a girl like that. I got a chance. I mean, really, that's what I thought. You know, I thought there's hope for us out there.
See, I didn't watch it with my kids, and because I thought, well, you know, we'll see how this is. But it's a skating movie. I don't know. I found that scene, and I'm definitely, I think I've said this before on the podcast, another episode. I'm not approved by any means. But I was just like, was it neat? Because it wasn't just like, oh, they're getting out. Like, it was pretty.
It was like brown chicken, brown cow.
Yeah, it was definitely pretty intense for a movie like this.
Yeah, when Corey Webster's trailer's a rockin'.
Yeah.
You don't. When his trailer's a thrashing, don't come.
Yeah. And I would say just a quick comment about him. Except for his shirt always being open, showing his chest, I didn't think he looked like a skater. I mean, I guess because everyone else looked so dramatically different. The Valley Boys that he was hanging around looked a lot alike, and the Daggers all looked like, of course, you know, they were off the streets. He looked very clean cut, very presentable compared to all the rest of the guys.
Yeah, well, he's the lead.
Well,
so.
And that explains why he got the girl.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not going to see Monk getting a girl like that.
No.
Well, before we get into the downhill, because he's approached by Sam Flood, who's like the owner of, what is it, Shock? Smash Skates.
Smash Skates. Who I don't know who this guy is. I know I've seen him in a bunch of stuff. That was good casting. I'm sorry.
You like that casting for him?
I liked it because the owner of a skateboard company, in my view back then, was supposed to be disconnected from skateboarding. This is a business.
No, but he, but,
I know,
but he was supposed to be like,
it. I know.
Yeah, he was supposed to have been like a legendary skater.
I know.
Now he's like this old.
I was just blindly going along with that part because he looked like he couldn't put one foot on a skateboard and not hurt himself.
Yeah, but he told Corey, like, if you win. You'll be skating for us. And then lets him come to the factory, which I thought that part was kind of cool. That was interesting.
Yeah, seeing all the decks made.
But if you watched it, do you remember how he's like, first, seven plies. And he's like, unbreakable. Like, just kind of like holds it. But then he shows him a wheel and he's like, well,
bite it.
You know, bite the wheel. And he's just kind of like, whatever. And he throws it at the ground and it supposedly bounces
right
up. But it like bounces it back from a different angle. Like there's somebody on the ground that threw a wheel up to him. That was funny.
Yeah, I'm just looking through here. It looks like that guy has done a ton. It's Chuck McCann. Has done a ton of voice work. I don't see a lot of stuff that I would recognize him in. I mean, as far as being an actor, I'm sure there's some stuff in here. But, he's done a ton of voice work for video games, for cartoons, all kinds of stuff. But he does look familiar.
Yeah, I've definitely seen him. And the only thing I'm looking at, maybe like Robin Hood Men in Tights.
No.
Yeah.
He was.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I was just thinking, like, this guy was, if it was just, hey, that's the guy that owns Smash Skates, I was exactly with you, Dora. I would have been like, okay, we'll have this, like, entrepreneur that's like, hey, skating's up and coming. Let me get into this. Disconnect. Exactly. But when they're like, oh, he invented skating, or I was like, oh, man, they misplaced this actor here.
I didn't see him as a former athlete, But he's this basically sets up Webster, Corey Webster. He's got a lot riding on this, the LA massacre, the downhill thing. He's got to, you know, he wants to get signed. He wants to, get the girl. He wants to beat the Daggers. And so it's all coming together in this final race. And this is another thing that, as a kid, I mean, this just looks super exciting. And it turns out Oklahoma is very, very flat. There are no roads here where you're going to hit 60 miles an hour going downhill on a skateboard.
Well,
it's just not going to happen.
I'll say, me as a human being, I severely question the 60 mile an hour thing. But let's just say, hypothetically, their average mile per hour was 40 miles an hour. It was supposed to be a 20-mile track. That would have made it a half-hour race. That's a hard downhill. Half an hour? My Lord, my legs would be mushed by the time I hit the bottom.
Well, that's why the Daggers were doing all that training at their house. They got to ride. They're sharp.
I guess so.
They're sharpening their skills, the Daggers.
Yeah, now Corey was dressed up in what looked like a prison jumpsuit. And in hindsight, it was so the camera could, it was so you, the viewer, could more easily identify him in the crowd.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, there are some great shots, especially towards the end where they're going and sliding around corners. Yeah. I mean, I was never able to do that. You know, there's some great, you know, that really shows some talented skaters in this part of the
game. Oh, yeah, downhill was hard. Don't let people fool you. I mean, street's hard, ramp's hard, don't get me wrong, but to do really fast downhill without slowing down, that's talent.
Yeah, I mean, where I live, it's pretty flat, and I'll be honest, if it wasn't, I wouldn't be trying that stuff.
I'm pro helmet for downhill skaters. I will say that. I will reverse my former stance.
Yeah, and if you remember in a previous episode, I even said, like, my original wheels were like considered downhill wheels,
right?
And it's pretty flat here too, so
yeah. I'll say by my mom's house, by the house I grew up in, there was three hills, small, bigger, and bigger, and I thought they were pretty big. I mean, I could get no doubt up to 20 miles an hour, I'd say, you know what I mean? Then we went over my aunt's house, and I remember going out of my aunt's driveway, making a left, traveling maybe 200 feet. And then a hill started. I said, this is cool. I'll go down this hill. I swear, 15 minutes later, I was at the bottom of the hill. And there was no way during going down that hill, I could have slowed down without hurting myself. I remember just holding on for dear life, thinking the hill has to end soon. The hill has to end soon. And it was, if I was going 20 on my hills, I was going every bit of 30 on these hills. And I was scared out of my wits. I remember getting to the bottom of the hill. It took me over 40 minutes to walk back up that hill.
You know, we had a similar thing one time where this buddy of mine and I, of course, we didn't have big hills like that, but Oklahoma is super windy, you know. And so we had got a bed sheet.
Nice.
And my friend and I, we were each on each side of the road, and we spread this, you know, bed sheet out like a giant sail. And it really worked, you know. And we went, I don't know, probably 2 miles, you know. And then, you know, at the end, you're like, well, now we got to walk home into the wind 2 miles, you know. It was not a lot of planning, you know, those days, but yeah.
Right. And I just want to throw this out there, too. I want to know how serious you guys were when you were skating, because when I was skating, I'll say I only watched for those couple years, maybe 3 8-hours worth of movies total, because I was too busy skating. And when I was watching movies, it was like a Pal Peralta movie, but it was only like 20 minutes here, and then we would leave skate, and then I would see 20 minutes later and I'd skate. Even in the winter time, we went into garages that were empty so we could skate.
Yeah, I remember skating a 2-foot mini half, which doesn't seem like much, but in a garage, like you said, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I was no great skater anyways. I mean, I had my own half. I was not a guy to really catch air or anything. I mean, you're not going to catch air like you would on a vert ramp on a 4-foot, but I had friends that would definitely catch 3-4 feet of air on my half pipe. That wasn't me.
Wow.
You know, I like more of carving, you know, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But even a 2-foot mini half is a lot of freaking fun, man. A lot of fun, especially in the winter when you want to get out and skate.
Right.
One of my buddies who I used to skate with, in Oklahoma at least, you could get a motorcycle license when you're 14.
Nice.
And so he and I both had motorcycles, and we were both skaters. So we would put our skateboards, like sit on them, on top of our seat, you know, on the motorcycle. And from a lot of these videos, you would always hear them talk about like secret skate spots, you know, like places that only they knew about or whatever. And so he and I would ride around in these neighborhoods that we knew had drainage ditches or knew had different areas and go look for these areas. And because a lot of our other friends didn't have motorcycles, you know, it was just the two of us. But we did that a lot, you know, and there were always these rumors like, you know, if you go to this certain place, there would be a ditch or something like that, you know, so we did that a lot, just trying to find those secret little, you know, hidden spots.
And that's what made a lot of it fun. I mean, the skating was awesome. I remember having, you know, skate sessions in a lot of different places and parking lots where just a lot of kids would hang out, and, you know, we would be moving parking blocks, you know, maybe stacking parking blocks to slide or grind on stuff like that, and hitting different places. But when you heard that there was somewhere else to skate, you know, and sometimes it was awesome, sometimes it was like meh, but it was like
it was
you got there.
And it was always an epic in your mind, it was an epic quest going to find them the first time.
Yeah.
I didn't because,
we didn't ride bikes anywhere. Like we would skate everywhere. Not until a couple years in, I had a buddy that was older who had an old Chevelle that would drive us around, and we would go to different places. Then we could go to different towns that we would hear, oh, there's a skate, you know, a ramp here, or, you know, a good loading dock here, something like that.
Right. Yeah. I was not particularly good at skateboarding. I mean, I was okay, but I was better than most of my friends. Like they weren't like they skated just because that was what you did. Like, you know, in the '80s, you got a skateboard and they would ride around, but I was like really, you know, trying to learn these tricks and stuff. And so I got, in with these other guys at school. And one time they were like, hey, we're going downtown Oklahoma City. And we've got this skate spot. And, you know, so if you want to go, and it was like six of us in a car, you know, and so we pile into this car and go down, and we went down to, it's actually a hotel. It's reopened now, but at the time it was closed and they had a spiral, parking garage, nice. You know? And so we go all the way up in there and these were like the guys that I wanted to be. I mean, like I had a, you know, normal haircut, I probably wore my Ocean Pacific, my OP shirt, and probably had some Vision streetwear. But these guys were like, you know, club homeboy. I mean, they, you know, they had all the cool skate stuff or whatever. And I remember the very first thing one of these guys did was pick up his skateboard and just smash in the front of this Coke vending machine.
Nice.
I'm just, right, it was in the parking garage, and he just, it's all plexiglass, you know, and just smashes it. And I'm like, oh my God, like we just took off
the daggers,
you know, skating down this
Welcome
thing.
To the daggers.
And I know I was, I'm totally team, ramp local. Like I wanted to be a dagger, but you know, when I was, like in that moment or whatever, I thought, well, this is not me, you know, so maybe that's why I like the dagger house. It was like I was living vicariously through the movie or whatever, but really I'm the guy in the RV. Except for without the girl. I'm Webster by himself in the RV.
Oh, man, that's too funny. But yeah, in the end, you know, Hook and Webster, they're all, it's cool. You know, he's got his respect.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear what Dora thinks about this.
That's exactly. Where I lost respect for Hook.
Yeah,
completely. Well,
but this is the Hollywood thing where it had to happen.
It
this
did.
Way.
Right. Well, and the only thing he could have done in real life to keep his sister away from Corey is to break some more bones on Corey. That's the only way.
Right. So this is the ending that I always wanted this movie to have. Is at the end, you know, Webster, of course, Corey Webster. He does this giant jump at the end, which. You know, when they show it, you're like, there's no way he lands this jump, but whatever. But he lands this jump. You know, he's going to win the girl. She comes over. Hook comes over. You know, he says, hey, man, I respect your skills.
And stabs him.
And then as they're getting ready, exactly, a dagger right in the belly.
Exactly.
You know, and then he's like, he turns around, you know, like breaks that fourth wall and he goes, daggers!
Yes.
That's how that should have ended, because there's no way. I mean, if he says, I respect your skills or whatever, I mean, don't you think that he's kicked out of the daggers tomorrow?
Yeah. He is evicted from that house.
I would, yeah.
Well, maybe he's planning on going back home with Chrissy.
He would fit in South Bend, that's all I'll say.
Yep, send him right back to Indiana.
Yeah, and I'll say for all, I mean, there were so, it was so easy to rag on certain little spots of this movie. But I gotta say, the skateboarding that was good in this movie was damn good. I really thoroughly enjoyed watching it. The bowl scenes, the street scenes were just perfect. I mean, that's how skateboarding, that was skateboarding.
Yeah, and in the one another scene that I really did enjoy, and it was kind of short, was when I, like I said earlier, where they were skating like on the Hollywood Stars.
Yeah,
and they're just like kind of carving around, doing little ollies, no massive ollies over, you know, garbage cans or anything. And that's my other, you know, animal chin reference. Same thing they do one in Chinatown. It's a little longer than this scene, but this scene, I mean, this scene was pretty, I thought, decent in length.
Yeah.
For being a Hollywood film, you know, but the skating in that scene compared to the, with the skating in Animal Chin, a similar type of skating when they're kind of like, where they're sitting on their skateboards and they're kind of like putting their feet on each other's boards, yeah, holding hands. Like,
course,
they do that in Animal Chin a lot.
Of course, that was Bozo doing it.
Yeah, right. But I love that scene. That,
so yeah, I was going to say two things about that scene. One thing, I think the whole movie in general, but that scene in particular is almost like a time capsule, yeah, of that little era. You know, I mean, that's like, there's no special effects. There's no, I mean, there may be some stunt doubles in there here or there, but for the most part, I mean, that is what it was like. I mean, they're not doing, you know, like you said, like 720s off the wall or whatever, you know, I mean, it's just good old fun out with their skateboards, regular old street skate.
Yeah,
definitely.
The one thing that caught my eye in that scene was this. I think it was Bozo crashed and rolled, and the other guys ollied over top of him. I know, yeah, if I would have fell and somebody would have ollied over top of me, I would have kicked his butt completely. Because the likelihood of him hitting me with a truck, and trucks are quite solid pieces of metal, yeah, that would have hurt, yeah, dearly.
The other thing it struck me, and I didn't think about this as a kid really, but watching it again, is it looks to me like, though, I mean, those don't look like extras in a film. It looks like they just went down with a camera, yeah, and skateboards and went and skated on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Yeah, I would say probably 99.99% of the people you see are just people on the street.
Yeah, and the other thing I noticed is they go by a theater a few times in The Hitcher. You can see a big poster for The Hitcher. And that was a kind of a messed up movie. I don't know, just caught my eye. But yeah, that was a really good scene. You know what, really, for anybody that skated at this time, around this time, because let's face it, you know, I probably started skating around 87-ish, I guess, and styles and stuff that were happening out on the West Coast change quicker than they do out here.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? So it was definitely of the time. Anybody who was skating around that time, I would really recommend watching this movie. Like I said, it's on YouTube in full. It was a good movie. Like anything, I mean, you can pick out little cheesy parts, whatever, and it had a lot of cheesy parts. But like you said, the skating in this movie, definitely it was of the time, and it was good. I mean, I really enjoyed watching most of the skating in this, the pools. And
yeah.
Go ahead, Dora.
I was going to say, yeah, I started skating around 80 or so, 81, on the real plastic crappy skateboard, which really wasn't skateboarding. It was more, like you said, Sean, a mode of a mode of transportation, and you could do 360s. That was about it, just spinning on it. When we first got into it, I want to say it was maybe 84, right around the time, Hulk Hogan, Iron Sheik, yada, yada. But for at least 3 years, there was no skate shop anywhere in my town of existence. We had no idea of a lot of the stuff that was really going on. So, like, we kept thinking we were making up tricks. And then, like, you know, 8 months, 14 months later, open up a magazine. Oh, it's called the No Comply. We didn't invent that, you know, kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And the one thing I respected about the movie, every skateboarding gang had levels of skaters. There was always one guy in the group who really couldn't skate great, and there was always one guy in the group who could skate really good. And that's what their group was. You could tell there were different levels of skaters in that ramp, the local them ramp guys. I love that part of it.
Yeah, and I think that's probably something that viewers, or, you know, kids back then like me, could relate to, is no matter what your level of skating is, there was somebody in the ramp locals. You were either you know, the great skater, or you're the intermediate, or maybe you're the
thank God I wasn't Bozo,
you know? Or you were the or you were the little brother, yeah. You know, that hung around because they had the one guy's little brother too.
Yeah. No, you're right. Yeah, there was always, you know, the guys that were really good. But they always seemed, at least where I live, the guys that were, like, really good, they kind of held off to themselves.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Maybe there were, like, two of them.
Right. Yes.
And they kind of would go around. And then they'd be like, oh, hey, such and such is skating over
exactly.
here.
Exactly. Those two guys, spot. We would always meet those two guys somewhere. Because they would always hook up earlier and whatever. And then we would hook up with them and then we would skate as a group.
Yeah. But see, like, I always knew, like these guys I'm talking about, I mean, probably, and I have two guys in mind when I was growing up that probably could have gone semi, you know, they were really that good. They just a natural feel for the way, you know, things would happen when you're on a board, where it wasn't like that for me, but I had such a good time, man. I look back at those years, you know, my parents were divorced. My mother got remarried. She moved to the next town over. All my friends that still lived in the same town and skating, I used to go, you know, and spend the weekend with my grandmother a couple days in the summer just so I could, you know, go skate with my friends in my other city where I came from, opposed to the guys that were skating where I moved, because it was a totally different feel. Not a Daggers and, yeah. and Locals type of feel, but just it definitely... I didn't fit in over, you know, where I moved into, and my grandmother used to just let me stay, and she'd have food for me, and I don't know, I just have a lot of fond memories when I think back to skating.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. So we talked just a little bit about this movie being a time capsule, but one thing that I think it's a, I guess part of that is some of the music that's in the movie, and I didn't capture everything that was in there, but I know we talked about the Red Hot Chili Peppers. There is the theme song Thrashin', which I looked up, which was actually done by Meatloaf, which I did not
I still
know.
Don't believe you.
Yeah, yeah, it's listed on there, but the one that got me is the Circle Jerks have a song in this movie called Wild in the Streets. And it, right, and it's when they're like chasing Corey. There's like a big downtown late at night. Yeah, chasing wild in the streets. And I mean, I would say that song got me in. I don't want to say got me into punk music, but it like opened up the whole new world for me. You know, because I don't know. I guess before that, before this movie, I guess I didn't really think of. I didn't put music and skateboarding together. You know, like we just kind of listened to whatever we were listening to or whatever. But, you know, in this movie, we were like, oh, I want to listen to that, you know. And I don't know, but there's definitely some good songs in there. It's not there's not a lot of songs in there that, you know, not top 40
right.
kind of songs. That right. are, there's a Devo song in there and it's not one that I was familiar with.
I heard when he's at the diner where they eat that big, giant bowl of ice cream. Right. I can hear who's that band? She drives me crazy. That's
Fine Young Cannibals.
That's what it sounded
not that
like.
It's not that song, but it is. It's got to be.
That's
that
what
band.
I thought
you
too.
Can hear that
it
guy.
Is. Yeah, they are listed on the now. There is no official soundtrack to Thrashin'. I mean, it never was sold, but on IMDb you can look up all the bands that are in the credits, and Fine Young Cannibals is on there.
Good call.
So I didn't hear it in the movie. That's a good ear. Absolutely.
Because yeah, I thought it sounded like him for a split second, but then I thought, no way, they didn't exist in 86.
Yeah, and what else I thought was when that big huge bowl of ice cream,
yeah,
and he's like, oh wow, you did really good. I'm thinking, man, you're good. I could not eat that much ice cream on a first
all
date.
All I kept thinking was, she better hurry up and get home and use the toilet, because she's going to blow a hole in the wall, because that's a lot of dairy. Because, you know, I'm old now, so that's what I think when I saw that.
And that's what I'm talking about, too. And that was that's a giant monster bowl of ice cream.
Yeah, and the other scene I got to comment on. If this was any time from my youth to 10 years ago, and I'm driving down the street, and I see her pull up her dress and stick her leg out and hitch a ride, I am picking her up. Yeah. That's all I'm saying. I would not pass this fine lady up. Why, hello, Chrissy.
Yeah. Yeah, I was the same way with music and skating. It was kind of, you know, like a lot of people were in, like you said, into punk. I think I started listening to like The Cult and whatever. My cousin, well, he wasn't even my cousin. It was like my mom's best friend had moved up from Florida, and whatever he listened to, like he would have like The Cult and a couple other like alternative type bands. So it wasn't really a ton of punk music.
Yeah, see, I was weird. I was taking my skateboard down to the mall, picking up cassette tapes of Ice-T, Rhyme, Pays, and the Beastie Boys.
Yep. I remember I went to this guy. He had a quarter pipe in his backyard, and they had this ghetto blaster set up, and they were just playing the Violent Femmes over and over. And I'd never heard the Violent Femmes before, so that I always associate that kind of with that era.
That and The Cure for me. Violent Femmes and The Cure is when I got introduced to that. It was from skating.
Violent Femmes, I always thought as being great youth drunk music for some reason. It was like whenever I was drunk, I would just hear that song and couldn't get it out of my head until I was sober again.
Yeah, definitely like college years. Not that I went to college, but I think all of us that got to that point, you would hear Violent Femmes and it would drink. I saw them in concert too.
That makes one of us.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. They didn't make it to Oklahoma. Yeah.
No.
I've only seen one quote unquote band in concert, and that was Paul McCartney around 98.
That's the only concert you've ever been to?
Really?
Really?
Wow.
I don't know why.
Wow.
It just happened that way.
I was just talking to somebody about this the other day, and I dug up an old blog post I did where I named like 50 bands off the top of my head that I've seen. I was big. Concert going.
I didn't see that many, but I probably around that time, you know, Midnight Oil. I was getting into a lot of the like alternative. Sinead O'Connor, I saw, but Midnight Oil was definitely the best concert that I've ever been to. It was just an awesome.
Sinead O'Connor, I was gonna say, awesome was trip. So close to being super attractive back in the day.
Yeah, she was hot. Yeah.
You know that first album, that first album's I don't want to say top 10 favorite albums, but top 50, The Lion and the Cobra. That's a fantastic.
That's a good album.
Yeah. And then she had to go screw it all.
Yeah,
up.
Well, yeah, with what I do not want what I haven't got or something like that.
Well, yeah, ripping up the Pope. Pope's picture.
Yeah, that's how to get over. Yeah. Genius right, marketing there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Know. Well,
the last. I don't want to derail us, but because I was going to say that I went last summer. I went to go. A friend of mine got free tickets, and we went to go see Slipknot and Korn. And last summer I was 38 years old, and the whole time I was like, "It's not that I don't like Slipknot, but I realize that I don't like people that like Slipknot."
Yeah,
if that's I don't mean that, you know, but you know what I mean, like. I'm just sitting around and I'm just like, it just hit me like I'm too old for this.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I totally know what you're talking about. You don't feel like you fit into that scene at this point.
Yeah. Sure. I just got to throw this in there. Over the last week, I was reintroduced to a family member who's clearly younger than me, who was wearing a Slipknot shirt, who basically had a mohawk, for better sense of the word, who kept inviting me to his apartment, who lives across the street from a strip club, and he has a pole in his living room. And he wouldn't stop inviting me over to his house. And I'm taking off my hat, thinking, I'm a little bit too old for that kind of activity there, son.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I was, when I was a kid, I was the guy, I was like, if you're not in the pit, you know, then you're not here. And this last time, I was like, you know, they really need a Slipknot needs a seating area. You know, I was, I don't know.
Just like skating, man. Exactly. It's not the same. You're getting get hurt.
Well, and I've got to say this before we end off. I seriously cannot thank Rob enough for bringing this movie up and basically making us watch it.
Oh, did you like it? I genuinely
liked it because from the first onset of the movie, you knew it would be partially real and partially Hollywood. There was no doubting it. It wasn't like Gleaming the Cube fakeness. And it wasn't like a Peralta, that movie where it was crazy skating. It was both. You know what I mean? And I will say, the main actor, Sean, did a very good acting job in the movie for also being able to skate some. You know, I was genuinely impressed.
Yeah, it was, I really enjoyed the movie. Like I said, when he brought it up after the show last week, I thought I had seen it. I knew it sounded familiar. I knew I had heard of it, but watching it, I'm like, yeah, never saw it, but I did. I did enjoy it. Definitely enjoyed this movie. Good pick, Rob.
So, two things. I don't know why. I used to look, well, actually, three things I should mention. One, I know you said that there's a link to this on YouTube, and that's definitely the easiest way to watch this. But Thrashin' did actually get a DVD release, and the DVD does have a commentary track. I think Josh Brolin is actually on it. I know Robert Ressler is on there. So there's definitely, it's a good commentary track. So if you like this movie, and I looked on eBay and there are copies of it for about $4. So, I mean, it's a small investment if you like this movie. A couple other things that are on eBay right now. There's one thing that's not on eBay, and I've seen them before, but they are custom skate decks that people have painted, like the Dagger.
I'm sure.
Skate decks, you know? Right. So, I mean, you just take an old board, paint it black, and put the stencil of the Dagger on there. I always wanted one of those just to hang on the wall. I don't have one, but those show up on eBay from time to time. And then the other thing that is on eBay right now are the Thrashin' edition of Nike SBs. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Nike SBs. SB stands for skateboard. They have an entire line of skateboard shoes, and some of them have different tie-ins, like to the classic movies, video games, stuff like that. But they actually have a Thrashin' edition of Nike high tops, and they have the Corey Webster. The front and the back have like the you know, because his name was Webster, he had like a spider web so he had the webs on the shoes, and then the front of the movie box has pink and blue, and the Nike swoop is pink, and then it fades into blue. So I mean, if you saw them, you would probably know. The problem is you're not going to see them on me, because the buy it now on this pair is $169. There are some in the $249 range.
And when were these made, Rob?
Recently. Oh, okay. I mean, within the last 2 or 3 years. Really? Yeah. Okay. They're definitely like a...
Because I was going to say, I didn't remember Nike having skate lines back when we used...
No. Nike SBs are... I mean, these are modern things, but that's obviously the market that they're going for, is people that have that, love of this film. But you'd have to love them a lot to wear $200.
You wouldn't wear them if they cost $200. You would just have them in your room.
No.
Wow.
Right. It's much more likely for me to get a pair of spray paint on black and put daggers on them. That's possible. I might be doing that to a pair of high tops.
Well, I do remember taking a pair of Vans I had that were beat up after a bunch of shoe goo was on them, and basically painting them and then taking permanent marker to them and writing all kinds of stuff on it.
I did that with a pair. A friend of mine had the Vision streetwear that had like tiger stripes or something on it. And I had just white Converse. And so I took a Sharpie and just kind of made my own, of course back then nobody cared. It was, your own little fashion statement.
Defiance is all it was. And I'll just say, if I was young today, I don't know if I would skateboard. Because I think, to be honest, now it's maybe too socially acceptable for me. Where I think part of the reason I did it was because adults didn't like it. You know what I mean? And they would basically try to like kick you out of places, where today you have designated areas where you can go to. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a whole remember the skateboarding is not a crime. Yeah. Everybody, you would put your stickers up and stuff like that, and they would have the no skateboarding. But, now my town, I mean, within 5 to 10 miles of me are probably 2 or 3 free skate parks, So it's definitely the public perception of skaters has definitely changed. Before, it was kind of the rebellious kind of thing. And now you could go buy, I mean, you could buy decent skate stuff, maybe not at Walmart, but definitely at, you know, any of the sporting goods stores in the malls or anything.
I think what happened too is it got to a point where they're like, all right, we got to give these kids somewhere to go. You know, we just happened to be in that time where we were the ones getting caught up in it. You know what I mean? Like, now I would still do it if I was a kid.
I'll say the main reason I was attracted to it is it wasn't a team sport. I didn't want to be on a team sport. I wanted to be on a
main
sport.
I wasn't really a big sports guy myself.
Oh, yeah, because everything I did, I failed at. I mean, pedal bike, multiple injuries, you know, everything like that would just hurt me.
We got to start wrapping this one up, but I have a question. Do you guys remember Skate TV? I believe it was on Nickelodeon.
Yes.
With Skate Master Tate. I think that's the thing.
Yeah.
Huh.
You don't remember that one, Rob?
No, I don't think I ever saw it. What is, this is on Nickelodeon?
I believe it was on Nickelodeon. It was like a half hour, like on a Saturday, maybe an hour. But it didn't run very long. And, you know, it was back when, like, do you remember Ray Barbie? These are, like, newer bones guys. Like Ray Barbie and Steve Size and stuff like that. I just remember that show. It was...
Well...
It wasn't on very long.
It wasn't on long, but cool. I remember it. Seriously, I didn't remember before you just said that. I remember it because it was SK8 TV. And I remember seeing, I want to say McGill on there. Somebody of real noteworthy was on it. And that's when I was like, what? Because like the contests and stuff that were on ESPN, I might have caught every other year. So for me to see this on TV, I thought that was great.
Yeah, I looked it up. It was only on one season, but I loved it when it was on. It was in 90. So, you know, it was just another cool thing. But
gotcha. Well, I'm going to stop listening to you now and watch an episode of Skate TV.
I got to say, I'm super glad that you guys enjoy this because you never know if somebody's going to enjoy something based on, you know, it's hard to tell. The things that we watched as kids, if it's retro glasses, you know, or what are they, you know, rose-tinted glasses, they say, or if it was actually something that was enjoyable. So I am glad that you guys enjoyed it. You know, for me, you know, you were saying that sometimes the trends from the coast didn't get to Buffalo, and you know, so imagine what it was like in Oklahoma. You know, I mean, it was pretty delayed. You know, so getting a movie like this was my view into that world. You know what I mean? Yeah. That was my little, like, what I thought everybody in California was doing or whatever. And so that's kind of let us be a part of that.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And that's good. Definitely a good pick, Rob. And I think this should satisfy our skate talk for some time. But we have to make a three-man pack here that when we do have this like itch that we want to talk about skating again, maybe in a couple months, we'll Gleaming the Cube is out.
Oh, yeah. No.
Gleaming the Cube is out. I don't want to do Gleaming
the Cube. Can't do Gleaming the Cube.
If anything, we'll do like skate videos or something.
I hate, but I will admit this right here, right now. I saw Gleaming the Cube in theaters.
I did too. I won tickets to it on a radio.
I paid.
I got a poster. I had a poster.
Hey, yeah. And I somewhat liked it back then. A little bit because, you know, you saw cameos of skaters.
Yeah,
but
I liked it up until...
But I hated the story.
Up until the silver skateboard.
No, yeah, the diamond
plate skateboard. That's when I was like,
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think what had it for me was the Pizza Hut truck.
Yeah.
They had that, but...
Where they all ollie into the back of it.
Exactly. Now, I don't... And you said, Sean, earlier... that you had picked up some 80s movies. Is that right?
Yeah, and that's going to lead into what our next episode is going to be. We're going to do another movie in 2 weeks. And the movie we're going to do, I think the three of us all, I think we all enjoy this movie. I think most people enjoyed this movie. And it is The Goonies from, I believe, 1987, correct?
I don't think I've seen this movie.
No? Yeah, it's a good movie.
Josh Brolin's in it from Thrash and Fame, yeah.
Yeah, but we're going to do a giveaway. We have a Goonies DVD to give away, and So you have 2 weeks to enter for that. And here's the ways you can do it. A couple ways. If you're on Twitter, you can, if you follow us at Throwback Review on Twitter, and then tweet at us, my favorite childhood toy at Throwback Review, and then tell us your favorite childhood toy. You can also, if you're familiar with Twitter, you can attach an image. It doesn't have to be a personal picture, but it could be. You could just be like, take Doors toy from last week, a sit and spin, and you just Google it and put that up there. Or if you have a commercial you want to link to in YouTube, that's fine. But just have to do my favorite childhood toy at Throwback Review so we can see those. Google Plus, if you're on Google Plus, if you go to throwbackreviews.com, there is a link to my Google Plus. You follow me on Google Plus, and then you do the same thing. My favorite childhood toy, make a post, make it public, and also put in there, share with me. So I'll see it and that'll be entered. Those would be, I'd say those are two different entries too. You know, if you want to have two entries, it would be one each, right? If you do, you could do 10 Twitters, it would just be one entry. And then if you do a Google Plus or whatever, and then there is the old Facebook, which I'm going to hand over to Rob here because he's our Facebook guy here. We have a Facebook account. It's also, there's a link to that on Throwback Reviews. There's a Facebook account. I'll give that to Rob.
Yeah, I think it's just Throwback Reviews Podcast. If you just search for that on Facebook, you can find that page. And we'll put a post up there as well that just says, send in your favorite toy. You can respond to that, share that on your page. And on Facebook, you can attach a picture the same way as you can with Google Plus or Twitter. So throw a picture up there, maybe of a toy from your childhood. It could be, like Sean said, it may be a picture, of you with that toy or just a link to it or whatever. But just respond to that post and share it out on your page and help us get the word out for the podcast. And hopefully on the next episode, we'll announce a winner. Is that when you're going to do that?
Yeah. Yep. We'll do that in the next episode. Okay. And yeah, you do that, get the word out, win a DVD possibly of a really awesome movie that everybody knows and loves. So I think it'll be fun. We'll see how that turns out. But also, in closing, we are on Stitcher Radio, so you can stream us on Stitcher. We're on iTunes. If you want to leave us a comment, that'd be awesome. At Throwback Review on the Twitter. Like I said, Twitter, Facebook, Google Plus, there's all the links on the throwbackreviews.com site. And also, I want to thank Pixel 8. Again, for the intro and closing music, go to soundcloud.com/retro/retropeachy and hear some really, really cool, awesome 8-bit tunes. Dor, anything you want to say in closing?
If people will be so kind, can you please find it in your heart to go to iTunes and leave us a review? That would be greatly appreciated.
Yes, it would. And Rob, any last thoughts from you?
I don't have much. I just, again, I'm glad that everybody liked this movie. And so if you like skateboarding or thrashing, you want to help us get the word out, just, throw that link out there on whatever social media site of your preference is. And we appreciate everything like that and appreciate the feedback, too.
Yeah, definitely. Throwbackreviews@gmail.com. You can send any feedback there. And for me, just go to the site, and like I said, my Google Plus is there. There's also a host link on the website, and I'm throwing these guys under the bus. If you go there within the next couple days, I will have links to their stuff as well under the host, give a little information, some links to their sites. But there's also another shows link that have some other podcasts. Rob's on, I don't know, this You Don't Know Flack podcast or something. You can catch a link there. Or Doors on some Linux for the Rest of Us podcast. There's a link to that. And then my other show, OTR Playlist. But that is all our stuff. And till next week or 2 weeks, we'll have the announcement of the winner of the Goonies DVD. So definitely a good episode. I had a lot of fun, man. Thanks for bringing this movie. And until next time, thanks for listening.